Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Daily Vikings Entertainment. We just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die.
I will ride with this group.
Seriously, man. Please.
And away we go.
All right, Purple Daily on draft every Monday on the Purple Daily YouTube channel and podcast feed. Tyler Fornes, Miles Gorham, Declan Goff here to take things from a draft perspective. We spent the main episode of Purple Daily talking about the great trade proposals and offers that ESPN kind of came up with for the Vikings to move up in the draft. I do want those guys' opinions on some of those here later on in Purple Daily on draft, so stay tuned for that. But we were talking off mic just about what is this team going to do. All the rumors that are flying around, people jumping to conclusions. And, you know, Miles, you put out even a tweet on, I believe, yesterday that I, yes, posted to Score North's Twitter account and, of course, blows up a little bit. Is there a godfather, you know, make an offer you can't refuse, Vito Corleone situation that Kwesi's basically trying to draw up here? Is he trying to make a team force a hand and just say, like, hey, take this offer. It's going to be the best one you can get. Or is this a situation where maybe you wait till draft day and you don't make a rash trade-up decision on March 25th, a month out before the draft happens?
I would say if the Vikings have strong conviction on a quarterback not named Caleb Williams in the top four, top three especially, they're going to do that to these two, the Commanders and the Patriots. I feel like the Cardinals are kind of their own. It's like the top three, and then it's the Cardinals and any team after that. But I feel like if you want to get into the top three because you have conviction on a guy that you like, this is our guy. This is our guy. Let me update that deck. It should be my normal mic, so it should be good.
I think it is your mic. You're good. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's my normal mic. I think if there's conviction that there's a guy that they want within the top three, they're going to go offer a trade to one of those teams that says, "Hey, we're going to take this offer. We're going to make you say no."
Yeah.
Like that's what it's going to be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, that's the whole point of what they're trying to do here is, yes, they've already made the first trade with the Texans. They got a couple first round pick and bullets they could use to move up a little bit. So Forno, is this a situation where they should try to get up to three right away? Is this awkward, murky area where obviously we know quarterback's going to go 1-2, and then it's kind of like up to the Patriots to decide, do they also want to go quarterback to keep chalk right there? Should they be forcing a trade and trying to get up to number three now, or should they be collecting information first before they make that decision?
There's this really big variable that is surrounding this whole conversation. What quarterbacks do they love? What quarterbacks do they think can be the future of the Minnesota Vikings? We can't really answer any of those trade questions until we understand. Because if they believe it's one of Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or J.J. McCarthy, if they believe in all four, they can be really patient because they can play the waiting game. They can see how draft day evolves. They can see, hey, does Marvin Harrison go at three? Do the Commanders maybe shock everyone and take a tackle? I don't think either of those are going to happen. But if you love all four, you can be very patient. If it's one or two guys, if you have to have one of Jaden Daniels or Drake Mace, let's say, then you're probably going to feel way more inclined to pay the price and go up. And because we don't have that piece of information, it's very difficult for us to accurately project on how the Vikings are going to act because we just don't know. No matter what, the Vikings need to get this quarterback thing right. If they don't, both Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi Ofemensah are probably gone. And if they get it right, what is really too high of a price to pay? Now, we'll kind of talk about some of those examples, as you mentioned in the intro, Declan, where I think getting rid of a guy like Justin Jefferson is probably a bridge too far.
Yeah.
But if you're talking 11, 23 and another first round pick, and you secure a true franchise guy, something the Vikings arguably haven't had in 50 years, I don't think that that is too high of a price. I would prefer not to give up a first round pick in the future. If you have to secure the guy, nobody is going to be complaining next year. Nobody's going to be complaining in 5 years. And let me tell you, CJ Stroud last year, then they got Will Anderson to pair with him. They led that team to the playoffs. And they had a later pick than the other pick that they had in the first round, the Cleveland Browns. So it's all about the results when you talk about the process. Like, if the Vikings end up with the 12th overall pick next year, but the quarterback looks completely legit, I don't think anybody cares.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the most important thing. How you feel about giving up that first round pick is going to explicitly be determined by how good that quarterback is and if you got it right.
Miles, is it okay, though, if they obviously give up 11 and 23 and then next year's first to go all the way up to number three, but then you're looking at, you know, this year's draft where, yes, you have the third overall pick, but you're not back on the clock, at least tentatively, until the fourth round. The next draft, you have no first and no second round pick. Does that put you in a hole, or is this just more of, hey, but at the grand slam, the top tier scenario is you have a quarterback that elevates, but does that type of trade, though, put you in a tough spot if you're Kwesi to try to still kind of rebuild your roster without first and second round selections over the next two drafts?
It'll always hurt. I mean, I think that's always the case in any roster building scenario. When you don't have picks, that's all, especially high end capital, it's always going to hurt. But there are ways to mitigate that. And I think what Forno kind of just pointed out is, like, if you hit on that quarterback, it's the rest of it's null and void. That's not going to matter, because you're going to have that guy that you can build around. And I also think the Vikings have that strong infrastructure in place that can help weather some of that, especially how they've so far handled this offseason, getting guys like Jonathan Greenard, Andrew Van Ginkle, and a few other guys to really, like, build around on defense to go with the already core pieces on offense that they have in JJ, Addison, the two tackles, and Hawkinson. So I think, and then obviously your coach. I think the head coach being Kevin O'Connell and kind of like a strong offensive-minded coach, that kind of puts that all together. And it doesn't seem like Brian Flores is going to go anywhere anytime soon, at least as of right now. So, like, you have a lot of strong infrastructure in place. And then we don't know if they're going to get the third-round comp picks next year, but, like, let's say they do. That also plays a factor in it, because that just gives you more draft capital that you didn't have without having to trade any players. You essentially moved on from guys, and you're able to kind of recoup some of that. It's not a first or second round pick you're recouping, but it's still capital on day two, even if it's the end of day two, that helps you when you don't have a first or second round pick. So, and they have a crazy amount of cap space, which we've talked about over the last few weeks, is a huge part of what the Vikings have. Is if you don't have draft capital, you need to have cap space. If you don't have either, which the Vikings were kind of in that scenario the last couple of years where they didn't have a lot of draft capital and they didn't have a lot of cap space. So they're kind of floundering where they had to hit on their draft picks. And now they have that flexibility in both of those areas. You might take away that draft capital because you get your QB of the future, but now you have a crazy amount of cap space, which helps in the short term rebuild some of your roster in some of those areas. And the one thing that we've seen from Kwesi is, I don't think he's going to overpay in free agency for guys that they don't feel is worth it. So I think they're not going to, like, hamstring themselves from cap flexibility from the open market. I think if there's a guy that they really want to get, they're going to pay for him, but that structure is going to be team friendly. As you see with, like, a Jonathan Greenard, it's cap hits that are spread out evenly, but it's basically like a 2-year, you know, guaranteed deal. And with team flexibility in years 3 and 4, like, they're giving themselves that flexibility that you're typically don't get on the open market with the high end guys. So I think Kwesi's done a really good job of maintaining that flexibility while also knowing that he has future cap flexibility to use to get guys to help rebuild the roster as they go.
So right now, Forno, there's 9 picks. Vikings have 9 draft picks for this year's draft. Funny enough, only 2 of them are Minnesota's own selection that they've accrued. Everything else has been acquired via trade over the last few years and whatnot. Now, if they're moving up, the natural answer is yes, of course, they will have, you know, less than 9 picks in this year's draft. How many do you think, it's hard to pinpoint now, but how many draft selections do you think they will have in this year's? Like, how many selections will they actually make by the time the first round and 7th round is over? What kind of ballpark, what range do you think the Vikings will have? How many picks do you think they will actually make once draft day is over?
It's a very interesting question because everything is determined based on a lot of those draft day moves that we know Vikings fans are incredibly used to.
Yeah.
Rick Spielman was somebody who would intentionally move down to acquire more and more stats at the Apple because he wanted to get more lottery tickets. And there is a method to that. There is some data that says that's a good idea, but it's not always the right approach. And with this draft class, there is a severe drop off after about round 3, round 4, where there just isn't the depth that there has been in previous years, because only, I think it was, the number was 53 underclassmen declared for the draft, when that number is usually around 110. You're talking about 50% less underclassmen in this draft, which means a lesser talent pool. Would not shock me if the Vikings only make like 6 picks and they try to package some of those later picks to move up, like go up from 108 and try to get like pick 87, something like that. Because remember, the Vikings traded from 87 to 102 last year, and that ended up being Mekhi Blackmon. Wouldn't be shocked if they flip it the other way. And that's the thing when you talk about Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's process, it's about trying to take advantage of the market. Well, if the market is bad later, you probably want to use those bad assets to go get one good asset earlier on. So my guess would be 6 or 7 picks. I could also see them making all of them. There's so many variables that we just don't know. And like, I'm going to be very intrigued to see how he handles this whole process, because this is a very odd draft from that standpoint. We've never had this few underclassmen come out in recent memory.
You're listening to a Score North podcast right now, and if you're a business owner, so are your customers. In fact, I could be talking about your business right now, telling the tens of thousands of loyal fans about you and sending them to your business. Find out how you can partner with your favorite Score North podcast. Visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner. Fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you quickly. Once Phil, Judd, Declan, or others start talking about your company, you'll be amazed at how many fans start showing up. So visit scorenorth.com now and enter keyword partner.
Miles, I'll flip it a little bit. I'll add a little bit of a twist to the question I just asked Forno, but let's say they do trade up and they go up to 3, 4, 5 and they get their quarterback, and then their next selection wouldn't be in theory until 108 in round 4. Do you see a way where they get back in to round 2, or is that just going to be like too complicated with not as much capital to use to kind of get back up in there?
To get back into round 2, no way. I just don't think that's possible because they don't have the picks. They don't have the future picks to do it. Now, if they want to get into round 3, I think that's feasible. They could use 108 and 129, probably easily get into the back end of the 3rd round. I agree. I think the biggest thing, we might see a draft this year where they pick 4, 5, 6 players rather than 8, 9, 10 that we're kind of accustomed to seeing, kind of similar to last year. They didn't have a lot of picks last year, and they moved over back because they didn't have any picks. And so I think we could see a similar scenario, but they package the later picks to kind of get the 4th, 5th round guys, 6th round guys, rather than just the late day three, 7th round picks. So I wouldn't be surprised by that, just based off what Forno's been saying about this draft class is very top, maybe up to middle heavy, and very, very kind of pretty weak on day 3. And so we could see that be the case where they kind of were like, well, let's go quality over quantity, the opposite of Trader Rick. And so if that's the case, like, I'm good with it. I think they've done a really good job of kind of filling a lot of significant needs in free agency, and kind of focusing on now and the future, where I truly believe this is what you'd call a competitive rebuild, not just a rebuild. Obviously, the quarterback's the huge case here, but I think they've done a good job of kind of fortifying everything else and kind of going in the draft not needing major needs, and so that they can kind of focus on filling depth and kind of competition after the quarterback position.
So I'm actually going to pontificate a little bit as I stall time, but I saw Forno put out a really interesting mock draft that I'll put up on the screen where you actually ended up trading back with the Rams and you accumulate the 19th overall pick where you took Byron Murphy Jr. You also took Michael Penix with 23. We're all under the assumption that, hey, they're going to go after one of the top four guys, which I do believe, obviously, is their primary objective. And Forno, I know you're against someone like Bo Nix because you've watched the tape and you don't see a lot there. But we're also really quick to like write off Bo Nix and the Michael Penix and even I'll even throw in like Spencer Rattler, basically day two picks that aren't the fringe are the fringe guys that aren't going to be solidified slam dunk top 10 picks. But some of those quarterbacks, like one of them's probably going to pan out. Why are we so scared to like not even take someone like a Michael Penix or even maybe a Bo Nix? Why are so many draft valuations, I guess, just scared and writing those people off? And I get the prospect, you know, difference in terms of the fourth overall pick versus the 38th overall pick. But are we writing off some of those quarterbacks way too early as like potential NFL legitimate quarterbacks?
So we'll kind of approach this in a couple ways. One, like the mock draft that I did, you can find at VikingsWire.USA.com. And my goal with these mock drafts is to explore situations. And there is a realistic outcome where the Vikings can't move up and go get that quarterback. And if that happens, well, how are they going to approach it? What can we expect? What are the different potential outcomes from that? So my idea going into this was, okay, you can't go into the top and get those draft picks. So what if we just load up on day two capital and they end up liking Michael Penix Jr.? And I think with this process, there's just genuine fear in the unknown. And that's a normal human response. It's when you don't know what's going to happen, you're a little afraid of it. You're afraid to change a job. You're afraid to go ask somebody out because of the unknown potential consequences that come with it, whether good or bad. And to my goal with these explorations is like, okay, well, what happens? Vikings can't trade up. So they get a great offer from the Rams. They get a second and third round pick, plus they send back a fourth, so the Rams still have some capital left. You get a great defensive tackle. You get the quarterback, who I still think is a quality football player. Ricky Pearsall really fits what Kevin O'Connell wants to do. Versatile, can run those in-breaking routes, has explosiveness, technical route runner. Patrick Paul has freaky, freaky size. He's 6'7", over 330 pounds, over 36-inch arms. He needs to learn how to play offensive line a little bit because he just relies a little bit too much on some of those measurables. But when you have over 36-inch arms and you throw up 30 bench press reps, like, for example, Blake Corum threw up 30 bench press reps. He's got like 29-inch arms. It is significantly easier to bench press when you have shorter arms. So doing it 30 times, like, this is a guy I'd want to develop. And you need to have a swing tackle. You need to have lower cost offensive linemen to build out your depth. So this is the kind of guy I'd want to take a chance on. And you know what? If he turns out to be a serviceable swing tackle for 4 years, good value. Yeah, you'd like him to be a starter. And you know what? Maybe he will be. But the swing tackle idea, Jarvis Brownlee Jr. is on the All-Forno team. And I think he could go round two. Some of these corners are hard to kind of pin down in that round two to round four range. But I thought that was great value. And overall, we made a couple moves. We made some trades up. We traded up to get Brownlee. We traded up at the back end of the draft because you don't really need 2 seventh-round picks. We moved that back into the top end of the seventh round. Like, it's not a bad draft class. And no matter what, you still have to hit on Michael Penix Jr. But you have the infrastructure. And if you believe in Penix, you believe that he can be the guy, you're giving him every tool that he needs to succeed. And the question is, will he? But that's going to be the question with all these guys. And I think this would be a great outcome if they can't get one of those top guys. They keep that first round pick next year. They still make 2 first-round picks and 2 day-2 picks this year to really continue to fortify that roster. Look, for a disaster outcome, this is pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like this is like the main contingency, like one of their more obtainable contingency plans. If it plays out like this, I could see it happening. But Miles, I think like they'd be like this, like, exhale of disappointment if they aren't able to trade up, and then like maybe they're reaching to a degree at 23 with Penix, but regardless, they get Penix however they get him. I feel like there's like this disappointment because they didn't go up to the first round. them getting Michael Penix, like, would you still be excited about that if they were able to still get Michael Penix and they were still obviously able to make a pick before that? Is that something that would still excite you, or would you be disappointed that they weren't able to just move up the draft and do something that they really have never done before?
I think it would excite me from the simple fact that I think Michael Penix in the Kevin O'Connell system where he just gets to sling it. That would be fun because that's just what he did all through college. And mm-hmm. I think he would fit this offense because of that. Like, he's a gunslinger. He's a guy that, like, he can throw the ball from different arm angles. I think there's a lot they could do with Penix. I think the one thing that I would probably struggle with is the fact that there isn't as much mobility. The two things I like to take out of the evaluation process, because I'll never have a deeper understanding of it, is medicals and off the field. Unless the off the field is something we clearly know definitively, I can't know something. I'm not saying Michael Penix has off the field, but those are two of the things that, like, yeah, I try to avoid in evaluation just because I have no clue. Like, I will never know those things unless someone definitively comes out and gives us an answer that, you know, like, and when people say that his medical checks came out clean at the combine, I feel like that was always going to happen. That information was always going to come out that way, because that's what his agent and those people want. And so I think that's the narrative that's going to get pushed. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but I just think those are areas I try to avoid. So I don't know those things, but from a Michael Penix on-field standpoint, the way he played against Texas in the college football playoffs, that was super fun. Like, that dude looked like a top 10 pick in that game. Like, that's how good he played. Can he do that consistently? I don't know. He's a little bit older, but, like, at the end of the day, I think if you're going to get, like, if your fallback plan is you can't get up, you can't go get one of the top four quarterbacks, Michael Penix would probably be the guy that I want to go get after that. Mm-hmm. Where he goes, I don't know after that. I think the Vikings would have to have a strong understanding of where that next group of quarterbacks is going to go to take that risk of waiting till pick 23 to take him. But if he's there at 23 and that's what they have to do, I would understand it. I would be disappointed just because I feel like all of this, like, buildup of the trade with Houston, mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins is gone, all of this stuff that we've heard in the news and all that stuff that we expect to see them trade up would probably just deflate that. So, like, it wouldn't even be a Michael Penix issue. It would just be like I got really excited as a fan that we were going to trade up and go get somebody. Doesn't matter who it is. I was just excited that we were going to finally do it for the first time in the history of the franchises of this team's franchise. And they don't do it. I think that buildup and that, like, suspense, and then all of a sudden the air getting let out would just be a disappointment. Yeah. Now, it wouldn't even matter who they took at that point. It'd just be a disappointment from that standpoint.
So to kind of build on what you said about medicals, Miles, I still remember 2 years ago, everybody was worried about Carson Strong's knees. And for me, that was the biggest, like, what if of his draft evaluation. I thought he could be really good if those knees were good. I heard from multiple people that the knees were good. I heard from multiple people the knees were shot. So even so, like, when we hear the positives, I mean, it was reported by Tom Pelissero. And Pelissero isn't some quack, but who gave him that information?
Exactly.
It wasn't the doctors, I can tell you that, because that's a HIPAA violation. Quack. So who's giving him the information, and why is it being reported? It's being reported because it's great for Michael Penix Jr. And there's a likely scenario that that's 100% true, that there is no long-term playing concerns with Michael Penix Jr. But as we learned kind of with the Carson Strong example, we're not really going to know until we know. Mm-hmm. And that might not come out until after he's selected. It could be one of those things where Penix, let's say he falls to round three, and then the second he gets drafted, well, his medicals weren't as good as initially were reported, and here's why. So that's a really big question mark, even still, because two torn ACLs, multiple shoulder injuries, those are problems. So the reporting may be accurate, it may not. And Miles brings up a really good point there.
Yeah, I wonder how that will help, like, how I'll help or hurt, not help him, but how that will hurt him. Because, shoulders and knees, I mean, the guy's like bionic at the top and the bottom, for God's sakes, at that point. It's not even just...
He's Steve Austin.
Yeah, he really is. $6 million
man, baby.
Yeah, he's got two shot knees. He's got two knee braces on. He's doing his absolute best to stunt mud holes in people. But that part, to me,
different
is super
Steve
interesting.
Austin, Declan. Different Steve Austin. Have you ever heard of the $6 million man?
Oh, the we can rebuild him, the actual Steve Austin. Well, I thought you were talking about if you bring up Steve Austin with me, Forno, you know my first case is going to be Stone Cold every single time.
Yeah, I mean, his knees were shot too, so it's fair.
That's true. Both work. But how much do you weigh like injury stuff? And then, hey, Jaden Daniels is like throwing to these elite wide receivers. You know, Joe Burrow was throwing to awesome wide receivers at the end at LSU. How much too of that is like, is Jaden Daniels really that good? Because he has a lot of talent around him. Like, what's going to happen if he goes to a team that isn't as talented? So many of these like draft whisper things and mm-hmm. what people are telling you in evaluations to me, I think that's what's so fascinating to me about this entire like area of the NFL. Blows my mind.
And that's why it's so incredibly difficult, especially when it comes to quarterbacks, because there's so many little variables that you just can't always get right. Like Joe Burrow threw to arguably one of the best supporting casts college football's ever seen.
Yeah.
He gets to the NFL. He gets one of them in Ja'Marr Chase. He has T. Higgins. And guess what? They make a Super Bowl. And yet you look at other guys who have played with great supporting casts in college, and they stink in the NFL. You have guys, Josh Allen played with nobody. His best player was Cody Hollister, who had a little bit of a run in the NFL. Josh Allen's one of the three best quarterbacks in the National Football League.
True.
So there's so many different questions, and the really difficult part about the evaluation process is they don't always have the same answers with every prospect. So if I look at a guy like Josh Allen, who has all the arm talent in the world, panics in the pocket, makes really bad decisions, but can make some incredible throws and plays, he translates, takes a couple years, but he translates easily. Malik Willis had some of those same traits and abilities, had some of those same deficiencies, has not seen any form of success in the National Football League. And that's where you can't just always look at one archetype. You have to look at each individual player. You have to look really in depth with how they're playing in college, with what kind of offense they're playing in, the things they're asked to do. And then you have to be able to answer those questions, and you can still be completely wrong, which is the wild part about the whole thing. It's fun. It's challenging. It's like you're in school and you decide to take like an AP class because you just want to challenge yourself and, hey, maybe I'll get some college credit out of it. But you still may get a one on the test and not even get anything. Happened to me. it just makes it fun. And it's a never-ending daunting challenge, and you learn every year. Even the best. Yeah, you take a look at some of the best in this industry, the Daniel Jeremiahs, the Jordan Reeds. They're going to get probably 5, 6, 7 of these guys completely wrong. They think they're going to be all-stars, and they're just going to be wrong. It's going to happen to me too, because there's so many things that we just can't quantify with this process. You can't quantify a human. You can't quantify situation based on like just a general projection. And it's so fun and challenging because of that, but it also makes it incredibly difficult. Like, I don't think anybody would have expected Lewis Seen to be what he is right now. I certainly didn't. Like, you live, you learn, you try to be better, but you're never going to be perfect.
Those are the two things I was going to hit on for now, is the like who they are as a person, like football wise and just as people. Like Josh Allen, you can see guys be competitive on the field. You can do all that. But unless you actually like get to know the person and see how they are on a day-to-day basis, which these teams get to do, mm-hmm. you'll never actually know. And then you're still making a huge bet on if that'll translate and how those guys will be able to play at the next level, and if they'll be able to process and be able to do all those things. Like, you can talk to a guy and they can be as passionate as possible. That doesn't mean that passion will translate to them being good at football. Like, mm-hmm. like you want that passion. That's important. That doesn't mean it's going to like translate. It doesn't mean it's going to be like, and some guys aren't like as passionate about football and they still end up being really good. Like it drives mm-hmm. you nuts. Cause I played with guys that were like the talent off the charts and you're like, oh man, you just naturally are just like the fastest dude on the field, but they just didn't mm-hmm. have the drive that you're like, oh man, like if I had that drive, if I had their speed, yeah. like I would be this, I would be that, but I don't know. Like, right. There's all of these things that you like think you would know that would translate. And it's just like really hard to know. And obviously the teams better than anyone have like the book on what they expect to translate. And so that's what they bet on. But like, it's always just, and then and at the end of the day, like circumstance was the other one you mentioned, I think is huge. Yes. Situation is so important, especially at the quarterback position. If you don't have a good enough, like it's not just coach, it's not just like position coach, it's infrastructure and players around you. That stuff is so important to how well these guys can become and how they can succeed. They have to do a lot of it on their own, but like the players around them can help them build their process and build their abilities up while having to hit these rocky bumps in the road. Like Josh Allen's the perfect example, because his team wasn't great when he got to Buffalo, but they had built a really good infrastructure around him to allow him to fail, but also fail up. Like, he failed up. He did things and he made mistakes, and they didn't let it become a major flaw and a major problem as he moved forward and let him build and progress progress through it. And not every situation allows you to do that. I think Bryce Young's a perfect example right now. Will we get to see that fail up scenario with him where he really struggled because the infrastructure around him last year was really bad, but they're trying to right that ship now? And can they do that in time for him to kind of salvage, you know, what I hope is a promising career? Because I like Bryce Young. I think he's a good player coming out. But we'll see. We'll never know.
One of the fascinating things about something you brought up earlier, Miles, is the guy who just has all the talent, but none of the drive. And I'll never forget, it was an interview Wayne Gretzky did, and this might have been in the 80s. And they asked him who the most talented player you'd ever seen was, and like, if it was himself. And Gretzky's like, no, it's Neil Broughton. Neil Broughton is arguably the greatest hockey player we could have maybe ever seen, but all accounts were he just didn't put in that drive. And then you also look at a guy like Anthony Edwards, where Edwards has outwardly spoken his desire to play football. And there were real questions about how how
committed
he wanted to, how much he wanted to play basketball.
I know.
Well, he still wants to play football and he still talks about it, but he is this close to being like the best NBA player in the world in like, I don't know, a couple of years. The dude's incredible. Like, even guys who don't necessarily love the game will still put in all the work and become the absolute best that they can. And it's so difficult to quantify the human spirit and the human desire and want. And that's one of the major things that makes this process so challenging, because there is no test. There is no analytical data point that will tell you this guy will be good or this guy will stink.
All right, I want you guys' opinions on this here quick as we wrap up. So some of those trade proposals that came through, which we talked about in the main episode of Purple Daily, Dan Graziano mapped out potential packages. For the Patriots one, he has the Vikings sending number 11, number 23, and next year's first to go up to number 3. I feel like that is just like the borderline basis of it'll start there, right? Like, you wouldn't be able to finagle and like milk anything less of that. I feel like that's the floor of a trade to get up to 3, correct?
Yeah. Look, if the quarterback hits, it's not too high of a price. That's the thing. We talk about the Trey Lance trade, the Robert Griffin III trade. Oh, they paid way too much. Yeah, they paid way too much because the guy didn't work. If Robert Griffin III becomes a multi-time All-Pro over the next 10, 12 years, nobody in the world is going to say that price was too much. Same with Trey Lance. If both of those guys hit, oh, they didn't pay enough because that guy's that good. So if they identify the guy and they're right, that price is perfectly fine. And if they're wrong, well, they're getting fired anyways.
Miles,
I also think people are. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say the Cardinals one, but give your thoughts on the Patriots one here too.
I was just going to say, I think people are underestimating the value of pick 23. Obviously, 11 has its own, and teams needing to move back, arguably eight, seven, you know, six spots to get to 11 from where they currently are. But I think people are undervaluing what pick 23 matters, because it's a it's an existing first round pick that you can tie a name to. You can't do that with future picks. You can get ideas of what you think that, whether it's the range of that pick's going to be or whatnot, but it's still a question mark. Like, you don't know. Like, the Bears trading with the Panthers last year, they didn't know they were going to get the first overall pick the following year, but I think they had a good idea that that team might not be very good from the jump, so that that pick might be pretty good. And I think that that stuff plays a factor, but 23 is in your face now. Like, you can tie a player, you can tie a value, you could put everything you want to it with what that pick values now, not what that future pick looks like. Or even, like, I've seen people say it'll take 11, 23, 25 first, and a 26 second or something. I'm like, well, are you guys not? Like, I just think we're putting, I just don't think we're putting enough value on, like, what that pick represents at 23 now. And I'm not saying that doesn't mean they wouldn't have to include a 25 first to get to 3, but I feel like that's a lot. And I feel like people are just like, oh, no, that's not like the Patriots are just going to balk at that. They're going to say no. I'm like, are you kidding me? A team like the Patriots desperately need that type of return right now, and in the future, to help themselves in roster building if they want to move off 3. I feel like that's plenty. And you might, you know, throw in a fourth round pick, whatever filler here and there. But like, the core of those 3 picks is a lot that I think I think people are just like, oh, it's got to be even more than that. I just think people are just, they want it to be like literally this God return, you know, this Godfather return. That's only happening for pick 1 and maybe pick 2. I just don't think you're going to get that much out of pick 3. because you're not getting your crop. You're not getting, like, pick one. You can take whoever you want in the draft. Pick two, a little bit more. Pick three, you now have to pick between the top four quarterback, the top, like, two of the four quarterbacks, not all three or all four. So, like, you get less of who you get out of that player, of, like, what you get to choose from. And so I think that's where it lessens the value of that pick.
I think a friend of ours, who's brilliant when it comes to football space, Matt Freeze, made a really interesting argument the other day, talking about how because they have 23, they could keep their 2025 first round pick and instead send the 2026 first round pick, which was a really interesting discussion, because a lot of times GMs don't want to necessarily trade for picks that far out because they may never get to make those picks. And the really interesting idea behind that, well, Commanders, new GM, Patriots, acting GM, essentially new GM, Elliot Wolf, Chargers, new GM, Cardinals, second year GM. They all probably get to make that pick if they end up making that trade. So you could save the first round pick in 2025 and send the 2026 if you had to send a third. And I think that is really intriguing because 11-23 and a 2026 first is more valuable for the Rich Hill trade chart than it would be 11, 2025, and 2026 first-round picks.
All right, we are running out of time here on Purple Daily on draft, but we will put a pin in some of this conversation to talk about on a future episode. We're a month away from the draft here, so we are excited. We're really jacked up to talk about this and plenty of other stuff to get into on future episodes. Hit that subscribe button, though, on Purple Daily YouTube channel for Daily Vikings Entertainment. We'll be back next Monday.